All right, Shia LaDuna, Shia LaBeouf. No, all right, I got it. Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
My name is Nolan.
And this is episode 129. And it is a very special, unique, beautiful, wonderful, stellar Patreon pool.
Wow, that's really, really a lot of descriptive words.
But well, I think they fit.
Yeah, it's true. So a Patreon pool is when we open up the door for our patrons that are at the $5 level or above to submit two games of their choosing from the Retro Master list, or I think we just say, you know, a 15-year-old game.
Right. There's always the caveat of like they can suggest it to the Retro Master list by making it a suggestion.
Sure. So you can submit those two games, and then what we do, instead of randomizing from our really long list of games, we just randomize from that smaller pool so you have a better chance of getting your game picked.
Which means we won't get games like Color a Dinosaur. Oh, wait, that was a Patreon pool game, I believe.
So this past week we had some wonderful and some interesting games in our Patreon pool. So we had games like Legend of Zelda and Azure Dreams, E.T., one of the ones that Kenny's really looking forward to.
I like those old games that were literal garbage.
And GoldenEye was another one that was submitted multiple times. Sheesh. But the game that was selected for us to play for the last 7 days was actually, I saw this in retrospect, it was submitted by two different patrons. So we mentioned last week Luciano, but I realized later that Dan also submitted this game.
Oh wow, was that on purpose? Like, did they coordinate
independent
that
of each other? Yeah,
I don't think so. I didn't see any talk about it in Discord prior to. So I think that it was maybe just a game that both of them really wanted us to play.
What? All right. Well, better. If our viewers are curious about the game that they suggested, I will go and say that they decided to give us a game that doesn't even exist in English. So thanks a lot.
But two entries were enough to make it our retro game of the week. So join us now as we talk all about Sinan Dunazi 3.
Come on.
That was the worst. Benedict Cumberbunded this game.
Try it one more time.
All right, Shia LaDuna, Shia LaBeouf. No, all right, I got it. Seiken Densetsu 3.
Overview.
I think that's pretty close to how I would try and pronounce it. Seiken Densetsu.
Okay.
It helps you sound more Japanese. Yeah, so we give this game with a Japanese title because, like I mentioned, this wasn't a release that ever came. I guess it's not the pond. It's across the pond if it's England. Across the other pond.
Across the pond and some land.
Yeah. I guess far, if it goes away back west instead of east, it could have still just gone across the pond. Across all of Asia and then across the pond. It didn't get an English language release, even though it followed up a popular game that was released outside of Japan that our viewers may have heard of. They may have even heard of this because lots of you are more well-informed even than I am. I say even. It's a sequel to a game called Secret of Mana and is Seiken Densetsu 3 is literally Legend of the Sacred Sword 3. So third in a series, but follow-up to a well-known title called Secret of Mana. It's an action role-playing video game that came out in 1995, and like lots of RPGs, especially on the Super Famicom in this case, Super Nintendo, was published by Square. And it's fantasy. It is classic fantasy. You got swords and magic and a whole world that's about to end because of evil forces and some characters that have to save the world. Now, thankfully for us, even though this game was released in Japanese only, it has since been very faithfully translated by a bunch of fans and is now available to find in English for those of us that aren't bilingual.
So we never really have this conversation on the air because it probably makes some of you viewers and some of us, not me, because I don't really have morals, but makes us feel a little bit dirty. But I think we've got to at least talk about it just a little bit here, and we can talk about it again in age and how we're going to be able to play it today. But really, literally, the only way to play an English version of this today is to play it through a ROM and emulator. There is no English release. So you could either play it, you know, on your Super Famicom from the Japan release, the original Japan release, or I mean, I guess if you've got a Nintendo Switch, you could also play it, but it's still just in Japanese, or you can play it through a ROM, which, you know, obviously we had to do this week.
I feel like I would have liked this game a lot less if it had all been in Japanese.
Yeah, I would have.
I've got my dual language translator, or I've got Google Translate up pointing at the screen, seeing if it can be real time accurate enough to keep up.
I just flew to Japan and had someone translate it as I was playing.
That's probably not the easiest way to do this, but I think that in this case, I really appreciate that there was a group of people that got together, loved this game so much that wanted to make it accessible. And so I think the first like main English fan translation was released in 2000. So still not too long ago, but
no, pretty quick after the game. I mean, relatively. 5 years. Yeah. Long enough for it to have been popular and then clearly missed. Like, okay, they're not going to ever release this in English. We got to just do it ourselves if we're going to.
So you mentioned about this being in the Secret of Mana series, and I think it's important, the Mana series, I think it's important to kind of just take it a step back. So since this is the third one, what made it over here as Secret of Mana was actually Seiken Densetsu 2.
Right.
Seiken Densetsu 1 being what actually came to us as Final Fantasy Adventure for the Game Boy in 1991.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
Which, I mean, it's not too far off, so any Final Fantasy fan will get some of that. I mean, Square, once again, Square and sure. Squaresoft, like you and JRPG, and even some of the people that were involved in some of the original Final Fantasy games had a role to play in this game and in this series. So you can get traces of that throughout. It's not going to be just a complete surprise to anyone if you didn't know that in advance. But it is interesting that it kind of started, or at least came to us. It had this kind of weird tie-in with Final Fantasy, and it's just super interesting.
Yeah, but plays really unique by the time it gets to the third title. Now, a lot of that may be evolution that's already come about through Secret of Mana, which, again, is the probably most widely well-known game, just because it was quite popular and I think has more of the feel that Seiken Densetsu 3 has. But does some very unique things, even in the JRPG space, that though you can see the overlap and you can see some of the like origin of publishing, I wouldn't say in my mind that this feels anything like a Final Fantasy title.
I would probably say disagree with you some. I think that it is unique enough to stand on its own, and I'm glad that they didn't keep it or at least align it more so with Final Fantasy. I think it deserves its own title and its own series, and so I'm glad they went that route. But with music and towns and just the role-playing setup, I do think that it had a lot of familiar things for someone that is steeped in the Final Fantasy realm. But all of those unique things that sets Seiken Densetsu 3 on its own trajectory are some of the things that we can talk about now in our gameplay section.
Gameplay.
Dustin, I like that you said unique things, because I think that's where we ought to start in talking about this game. We can get to some of the, you know, specifics of gameplay as we kind of go through this, but some of the things that stick out to me as novel, I think, are worth talking about first. And so one of the ones that is the most intriguing to me, and that I didn't get to experience firsthand this week, but that is absolutely fascinating in a game like this, is the fact that this was a designed to be
two-player game.
Yeah.
What?
Why not? Okay, it's one of the most unique and novel things about it.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, there's other unique and novel things that happen before you even press a button on your keypad.
Absolutely. And I think we should discuss every single one of them, because those are the most fascinating things to me. But you don't hear about that in a multiplayer game. I'm sorry, multiplayer. You don't hear about that in an RPG almost ever. They tend to default to turn-based, and if you're playing multiplayer, you're handing the controller off to somebody else. And the fact that this is not just multiplayer, but simultaneous multiplayer is completely novel for me, at least for this genre.
Well, and RPG, right, for this genre, RPG, like, that does not happen. And I honestly think it should happen more, because that's incredible. Like, again, we've played together kind of fantasy RPG games that are like massive online, where we kind of create our own story. But I would be all about playing a game with you guys that is RPG based, where it's linear and we are all kind of walking through a story.
Absolutely.
Together.
It'd be amazing.
I can see how that would be the best thing ever, but I can also see how it can be kind of frustrating at times.
Well, just because Dustin's character would run right into the middle of all the enemies every time and just get beat up.
No, Kenny would be a support tank, yeah, and do all
he
sorts
would spend
of weird
all
things.
His time at the shop buying needless items or something.
Until you need them. That's what I'm there for.
Okay, so multiplayer, that is very, very unique for RPG, right?
Absolutely.
I believe that for Secret of Mana, so the game before it, I believe that it had that feature as well. And not only but I think you could do three.
Yes. And this one was released with just the ability to play two. Although my very limited understanding is that some of the later tweaks to the game, including the translation, also included some things that allow a third player to also
correct.
Play.
So the fans loved it so much, they translate it, and then there's like a version or a hack out there that allows you to do, yeah, three players, which is your whole party. So that's kind of sick.
That's so sick.
Wait, your whole party?
I mean, three players.
Wait, you have three players? You're not just one player?
Oh, something else unique and novel. Well,
so
transitioned.
Before you press a button, it gets unique. And sure, there are other games that do it. But so coming from Final Fantasy, it's kind of unique here in that you have a choice of six characters, and they're just on the screen. You have no kind of stats or anything that tell you why you would pick a certain character. You get their name if you click on them. Do you get a sentence describing them, maybe?
You get like a
where they hail from.
And like the country that they're from.
Yeah, that's okay. It.
So you get a sense if they're a caster or a fighter or those things. But even that you only get from an implication in the picture. And then when you select the character and it brings up their name that you can edit, it gives you like one or two bullet points, like their role and where they hail from. And that's it. That's all you know.
But what you're doing there at the beginning is crucial to the game that you're going to experience.
So much so that completely. You may want to restart if you start having difficulty later. Like, it's sure. Really, really important.
Well, because each of the characters have their own story and mm-hmm. strengths and weaknesses. So you could either build a sick team that will allow you to power through this game with little difficulty, or you could cripple yourself from the beginning by getting like two supports and a healer.
Yeah.
Now, you glossed over something that is by far one of the most unique things, and that is you're not just picking a party that is unique because of its composition, like in a lot of these games, where, sure, it's easier or harder based on whether or not you have, you know, a tank and a mage and a healer, whatever your classic sort of synergistic combos are. But you kind of alluded, Dustin, to the fact that you also get a completely unique story based on not just which character you pick, but which supporting characters you pick to complement them in the game.
That's one of the best things about this game, in my opinion. So what that means is you have the six characters that you can pick from. The first one you pick is your main character. So you have Duran, Kevin, Hawk, Lise, Carly, and Angela. So if you, whichever character you end up picking, that's the plot you follow. So that means this game has a ridiculous amount of replayability.
A ton. Now, it's not quite as generous as having six complete different stories. I think there's sort of three main overarching stories, but then variations on that depending on your combination. And even then, you do get unique backstory, kind of your prequel prologue for each character individually. So,
and
yeah, ton of replayability. And interactions matter with your party in terms of how they work. So you can replay with different groups and get benefit there, too. It's crazy.
Well, and on top of that, the people that you do not select, you still interact with at different points in your gameplay.
Yeah.
Oh,
the other options show up as NPCs.
Yeah, you come across them in the time where if you were playing them, you would be. Like,
oh, okay.
They cross paths all the time and even maybe at times temporarily join your party for just a brief amount of time. But
yeah.
They're all involved in this story. Three main paths, each with their own kind of like main enemy that they're going after and reasons for going after those. So I think like the main three stories is Duran's story, Kevin's story, and Hawk's story. And then like you mentioned, Angela's is linked with Duran's story, Carly is with Kevin's, and Lisa's is with Hawk's. And so they've got their own stories. You select from the beginning your main character. You team up with the other two throughout your origin story. Here's the thing. Dragon's Age Origins just stole everything from here. Like, this is the game. They surely didn't. But what was heralded as such an incredible thing for Dragon Age Origins, where you could kind of create a character and then you get their origin story based on the race and all of the things that you chose about it. Like, it kind of happens here in Seiken Densetsu 3.
Yeah, and that makes the game, like, the depth of the story and, like, even the gameplay, since they join your party, like, there's so many options. I was kind of blown away. That's the first thing they throw at you, and I was like, okay, this is new. Because usually, I mean, think about it. RPGs, it's a linear story. You come across the characters you come across, and you put them in your party, plain and simple, or you don't. But in this one, it's kind of just takes a huge turn from that paradigm.
And that's not the last unique thing that happens fairly early on. It's the biggest, most fundamental one that's kind of game defining, but even some of the gameplay kinds of things and some mechanics have some really unique twists. You have days of the week that matter. You have time of day that matters. That, to me at least, feels completely like a PC title game and not an early RPG, but a later RPG. That's crazy on an early console. You get, oh my goodness, so many things. Some of the menu stuff is really novel. Some of the way skills work and your progression works is super novel. It just feels so unique. And I say that as somebody who did never play Secret of Mana. So maybe it's real derivative. I don't know. But I hope we get the chance to go back and play.
Let's even talk about the battle system, because the battle system is unique.
Oh, that's true. We pointed out that this is an action RPG, not a turn-based RPG. And so walk through what that looks like.
So you don't leave the world, and there's no random encounters for battles. You see the creatures when you enter a new area, and they move towards you. You can run past them just fine, obviously, and not fight them. They'll hit you along the way. The best thing to do, because you're playing a game, you're not just running past everything, is to encounter these. You see your three characters once you have them all at all times, and the two that you're not controlling, Boeing have their own AI, their own artificial intelligence, and begin attacking.
Or if you're playing it like us individually this week, the two characters that you're not controlling. Did you say two? I thought you said one.
I think I said two.
I may be confused. Either way, any characters that aren't controlled by a player go to an AI, go to an automatic set of skills, and so they still function and do their role.
So you control your one character and you're attacking or you're casting magic. You can pause to get this little ring menu in order to cast spells or to use items or to do different things like that. But other than that, there's no pause. You're battling, you're charging up from successive hits and then being able to do kind of, it's not a limit break because you get it very, very often, but just this extra powerful hit.
Yeah.
But one of the most unique and incredible things, in my opinion, is that you can, in battle or at any time, press select to switch to control of another party member, which sets your original party member to AI, or just temporarily hold your L or R button on top of your Super Nintendo controller. Yeah, those two buttons that are often forgotten in almost every other Super Nintendo game. And you can temporarily gain control of another party member using an ability or a spell before releasing that L or R bumper and going back to your main character.
Yeah, it's such a fluid way. A crazy fluid way of addressing something that could have been really, really clunky of cycling between characters. And it takes a little bit of getting used to. But once you do, the fact that you're not playing all three in real time isn't nearly as big a deal. It's sometimes frustrating, but it's not like the others are sitting there not doing anything. And so they hit a really sweet spot where, hey, if you're not going to be playing with other human players, which is probably the best way to play this game, at least you have these really easy ways of getting around that. And it still feels good.
So Kenny, you mentioned a couple of other unique things that I actually would like for us to go into. You said the menuing was unique. So I don't know if you're talking about that ring system that Dustin was talking about.
Yep.
So, okay. Yeah. So that's really cool. But also just your character menu, like when you pull up your menu, like to do item management and stuff, I absolutely love what they did. It's a 3x3 grid and you even have like a little mini map in the bottom right that labels it like equipment, items, magic, and you move your screen up, down, left, right to get to those areas. I thought that was such a unique take on menuing, which can be monotonous and it can be dull looking and boring in RPGs, and it makes it so cool. And like the backdrop is a map, like it's textured and it looks really cool. Like,
so you liked that?
You hated that?
I didn't hate it. It was probably one of my least favorite things. I didn't think it was intuitive. I thought it was kind of clunky.
Oh my goodness, I loved it so much.
Yeah, I didn't care for it.
I was torn. I was more impressed with the fluidity of the ring system just as an answer to some of the clunkiness, and felt like, yeah, the navigation. I liked the kind of multi-page layout, Nolan, that you talked about, instead of setting it up as just like multiple tabs on the same screen, kind of knowing where you were for each character. But after that, it didn't get real intuitive. I felt like between having to switch your characters and then push too many buttons to do too many specific things, items, swaps, gear upgrades, it just made this game more in depth than the rest of it feels like.
Kenny, you mentioned another unique feature that I think we've got to at least talk about just a little bit, and that's the morning night cycles. I mean, we can throw day cycles in there too, but games do this.
Yeah.
Games then do not.
No.
And this
month
had
system,
a,
though. There's a month this, system.
And
there's
not in ways that matter.
There's a day system, days that matter, because based on the day of the week, your certain magic spells are increased because that magic is from that deity of the day or the god of the day or whatever. Lore.
It's ridiculous. Who thought of that?
So deep. That morning night cycle is not the biggest deal early on, although different enemies come out at in morning and at night, and different events occur at morning or at night. One of the key things that happened, though, is if you are playing as as Kevin or have one of the characters Kevin in your party, which Nolan and I did. Kenny, was he in your party or no?
No.
Unfortunately.
So if I went back and started again, I'd put him in there.
Kevin is key, and I think he's the only one that's kind of affected by the day-night cycle. But he is for all intents and purposes, a werewolf. Yep. So at night, he turns into this wolf, this werewolf, and has a greater attack power and stays that way each time you go into battle during the night. Just incredible.
Yeah. I can't believe that's in this game. I can't believe that mechanic exists and that it matters, that it's not just cosmetic or just for the sake of it. Like you said, games at the time didn't care about that. They didn't think to do that. That was something that became a staple later, became common later. So super appreciate that's in there. Another thing you mentioned earlier, Kenny, that we need to talk about is the leveling system and how you level up your character. So,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, when you battle, you gain experience by killing the enemies. And when you level up, one of those spinny wheels comes up. And you choose to upgrade one of your stats.
Strength, agility, vitality, intelligence, spirit, or luck.
I'm glad you had them ready because I did not. you choose to level those up. But the cool thing that they do here and add a little bit of balance to the game is you can't choose the same stat like constantly.
Yeah,
I think you can do it like twice, maybe three times. I don't know. But apparently, if you're trying to do strength the whole game, it will stop you because you'll get too strong and you'll start one-shotting everything or whatever. So like it makes you choose. And I think that was a very wise decision to put in this game to keep it balanced. When typically RPGs do like the auto leveling with stats, they kind of auto assign the points for you. So that was pretty cool.
But it means customization goes beyond just choosing a character or class. It means it can literally go, I want this character to be dealing more damage. No, I want this character to be dodging more or attacking more quickly. I want this character to be soaking damage. And you're not just choosing that on kind of a meta level, but on a like level to level, character to character decision that ends up affecting how your gameplay works. And it's so novel.
One other thing that's not as unique, it's done in a few different RPG games, but I still, when they do it in games and do it well, it's just so much fun for me and it gives so much replayability because you can really tailor the game to your own play style and it goes along with this leveling system. But at two different points in the game, I think you have to be minimum level 18 and then minimum level like 36 or something like that. You are able to select a class for your character. So the level progression is, you have so much choice there and you can go either light with your character, with your class upgrade, or you can go dark. Yes. With your character upgrade.
Yeah.
And you do that twice. So you've got combinations of light, light, dark, dark, or light, dark, or dark, light.
Yeah.
And all of those have different titles and have different abilities and
change
strengths
the way your
and
character
weaknesses.
Looks too.
Right.
Yeah, and character. Yeah, and character looks. It provides so much replay value.
So basically, if you have six characters and there's four versions of each of those characters, you have 24 unique versions of characters to play, three characters at a time. So that's if you don't even want to explore character relationships and synergies, but just literally play each version of each character once, you'd have to play this game six times.
At least. And like, one thing about that though, that I wish they would have done, those light and dark decisions don't do anything to the story. I don't think it's strictly gameplay, like maybe looks and then the stats that you get from it. So it would have been nice to have like some sort of plot change because of the decisions you make, maybe the ending. So that would have been an even extra layer of immersion, but I'm getting greedy at this point because they've given us so much.
That starts to get beyond like
because
physical capabilities of what they can fit in a game. When they've already done unique backstory for all the different characters, Well, I just don't think they could.
Even modern games that do this, the origin take, like they do it, and I don't want to like pull the curtain and show you the wizard that's hiding back there, but they always do it in such a way that it links up, and so it's really not tons of uniqueness for for these games like this, and they always, but they do it very well and do it where it's hidden and it still feels unique.
Yeah. It's sort of so faux this, linear.
Oh yeah, but to add that, you know, halfway through the game, then three-fourths through the game to change it up for six different characters would be a lot more resources to put into that.
Yeah.
Aged. There's so much to talk about here. We've already kind of addressed some of the replayable things that make it replayable. Within Aged, we always talk about visual design and audio design as well. Yeah. So I'll just say that I think visually it's astounding.
It's ridiculous. Like,
it's a bright color palette in my mind, reminiscent of what we see often on the Genesis that we don't typically see on the Super Nintendo. You've got super detailed sprites, massive bosses that are just so much fun to fight against. I think visually it's absolutely astounding.
Yeah. Are you kidding me with those bosses? So detailed. And they're so huge. Epic. Like, they feel epic. Yeah, they feel like epic battles, which I don't always get from RPGs, at least turn-based ones, you know? Like, it's just kind of a picture of an enemy. But yeah, like, I actually, I think Secret of Mana was brighter than this, if you can believe it. If you go look at pictures, Secret of Mana looks even more Sega. So I feel like the color palette's a little toned down. But I like it. It feels so Chrono Trigger to me. And that's one of my favorite art styles, period. So, like, I'm with you. I would be shocked if anyone had a problem with these graphics. I'd fight them.
No, it's beautiful. They hit that balance of, like, cartoony versus realistic really, really well. The sprites have that sort of classic JRPG look, but then have some really fun and outlandish movements that are big and silly,
yes,
but are detailed and clean and just beautiful. And then the world that they throw them into is complex enough and pretty and good textures and shadow. And then they go to these cutscenes that they try and do things that you can't really do, you know, flying around in the sky and landing and on ships. And I mean, they just nailed it. I don't even know what part of the visuals to talk about most, because you guys are with me and geeking out.
And with the day and night cycles, they're having to throw shaders on there for night too. Mm-hmm. And it still looks beautiful at night, you know,
like, yeah.
They had to do so much with the visual design here. And I think they nailed every single piece of it. Mm-hmm. And then I think soundtrack is on par with early Final Fantasy games, which, in my opinion, is some of the best music, video game music you get in Super Nintendo games. I mean, sure, there are others with Mega Man and you know, a few others, but I think Final Fantasy nailed a lot of it, a lot of the fantasy music at least, and I think it was absolutely on par here.
Dude,
yeah. Immersive, really well thought out. There's a few places it felt a little heavy-handed to me.
No.
I'm just talking just like, I wish they'd just dialed
There's
it back
no
like
here.
6%. But the music was awesome.
Yeah, it's top tier, can't be beat. It's so good. It's so square, but also so unfair that this was kept in Japan. Like, yeah. I needed to hear the soundtrack. Rabbite Forest, that track has been on repeat for me this week. It's amazing. Like,
yeah.
I can't get over the soundtrack. I love the battle music. It's not repetitive. I love the town music. It's dynamic. Like, it's not just some repetitive, like, chime. It some of them, like, build. Like, they'll build up to a point and then kind of, like, gets really quiet. And then it comes back down to the beginning. And it loops back in. It starts over. Like, I need to know who... I wish I had his name. I don't know. I need to know who composed it.
His name is Hiroki Kikatu.
Oh, you have it? Nice.
I may have pronounced
it
incorrectly.
I'm not familiar with that name, I don't think. That's, it's so good.
He's the same guy that did Secret of Mana.
You mentioned early on, Kenny, we didn't get to do it, but co-op multiplayer, if I was sitting by either of you guys and able to play, or if we used the updated thing.
Yeah, we might, like, this is almost a game worth dealing with the headache of like NetPlay over an emulator and trying to figure it out.
Does that exist?
Yeah.
Like NetPlay, we all three of us could play this game together.
Yeah.
All right, episode's over.
What's wrong with our life?
Sorry, we got to cut this short. We've got something to do. Unrelated.
I love technology. I love the internet for doing that.
Do you understand how much fun, how many hours we would put into this? We would. Oh my goodness.
Okay, here's what I've got to say, because a lot of times we come in and we like mostly get a taste for a game. This is RPG in the classic RPG sense of you have a huge world to discover and explore and characters to develop. And we only got such a tiny taste of that part of why we're freaking out so much is because I think all of us probably still want to be playing this game more after this week.
Yeah, like for sure. Definitely. For sure.
Yeah, Nolan, you had asked me early on if it was going to be a game that I finished this week. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, absolutely not. Not only did I not have the time this week, but it's a game that I want to draw out and cherish. I was not rushing through. I took my time to battle and grind a little bit, which you don't have to do. But I enjoy it.
Blast in this game. Yeah. It's so different.
Here's a few other things that I didn't mention in gameplay, but I just think makes it so palpable for today. So there's so many design decisions that were just brilliant. Yeah. So I don't think this always has to be the way. In fact, I've really never seen it in JRPGs, but I think there's such a simple store system, not like storing items, but like going and purchasing items that I actually enjoyed. I could see how it could turn some people off, but you don't have multiple weapon pieces or armor pieces and different talents to buy for an individual character. You can only buy one weapon or one armor piece for one for your character at a time. And I like that because it doesn't force me to make a choice, you know, between two or three different weapons. Yep. It's just a new town. I've got one weapon upgrade and one helmet upgrade for each of my characters. And I thought that was simple and nice and worked well.
Yeah.
On top of that, this is the first RPG that I played, older RPG that I played, where you can push people out of the way. Did y'all know that?
That's such a tiny little quality of life thing for older games, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't have to wait. If someone was in front of me, I could just push them out of the way. It was incredible.
If they're blocking a door, get out of my way. If there's a chest you need to get to and they're there, get out of the way.
And I don't know if they animated it for each and every character, but for my character that I was playing, he actually puts his hands up. So it's like, it's not just like you're running into them, which they do in some RPGs. He puts his hands up and you just like a legit push out of the way. It's great.
And to kind of merge your point about the store system and the graphics, I love that it took away the stress from it for me, because I usually get stressed about money management and what items I need. But I also really love the little sprites for each piece of gear. Like in some RPGs, you just have the name and the text. But in this one, it gives you the sprite and that pinwheel selector. And it just made buying things fun. Another thing that makes the game really easy to get into today is the save system. I don't think we mentioned it in gameplay.
Oh, yeah.
There's a statue placed throughout the game. So usually in RPGs, you go to the inn and you get healed all the way, and you can buy tents and stuff in Final Fantasy games. You will find statues in this game that you talk to. It'll replenish your HP and your MP, and it'll let you save. So, and I think that works perfectly with the battle system in this game, not being turn-based, being action, being somewhat of a button masher. You take more damage than you typically would. So it just makes it so easy to get into this game. Like they thought of a lot of quality of life things that you were talking about, Kenny, and delivered, and it makes it super playable.
As mentioned, this game is super playable today, even in English. It is easy to get your hands on, as long as you're fine with a peg leg and an eye patch. But otherwise, you could get it on the Nintendo Switch, or if you've got a Super Famicom, it's probably a little bit more difficult to get your hands on, and you're going to need to do what Nolan did this week and actually fly to Japan to sit by a translator.
Yeah.
Or learn Japanese. Easy.
Hi.
Konnichiwa.
No.
That's all the Japanese I know right there.
Final thoughts.
So at the end of each and every episode, we determine whether or not our game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which clearly this one is not because we hated it.
Yeah. Everything we've said about this game has been negative, and we had a terrible time this week.
A general thumbs up or thumbs down, and it requires 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or another. This is what I'd like for us to do. I mean, definitely share our opinion, but do one thing that we have kind of failed to do. I mean, I acknowledge mine. Let us know who your party was, like your main character and then the two supporting, okay. Yeah. And then give your final thoughts. Okay. Nolan, you want to start us off?
Sure. So I went with Kevin as my main character, Hawk, the thief, and
yeah, you would.
Carly. I almost went Hawk main character, but I
was surprised,
like,
you didn't.
I am too. I'm surprised at myself, but Grappler sounded interesting and I looked up his bio. And then Carly was my third, so the healer. And first of all, that made for an interesting party personality-wise, but I'm in love with Kevin. He's the best character in any RPG of all time. He's so good. I absolutely love this game. It is not fair, and it was a bad decision that they did not bring this to the US, but thanks to geniuses, they brought it to us, and now we can play it. So, like, it's a must-play RPG. It is one of the best RPGs I've ever played, and it's the best game I've played on this podcast out of all the games. Over Mega Man 2, wow. Over all of them, it's the best game I've played
over
on this
Chrono
podcast.
Trigger?
Over Chrono Trigger.
Oh.
I knew what to expect from Chrono Trigger. I love it. I love Chrono Trigger, obviously. Yeah. This game's not better than Chrono Trigger.
I got to talk about this game some more.
Yeah, I know. I wish this was a 2 hours. So, Doug,
so you do give it
plus.
Your
yeah.
vote. I just want to use that segue to say that so many Chrono Trigger vibes, but this game does it better for me. My party first was Kevin. So Nolan
Best.
And I didn't talk about it. We both just ended up with Kevin.
Best.
But knowing me, y'all probably, this isn't a surprise. I did research on like what's the strongest team
sure.
or what's an
yeah.
easy team. So Kevin was my main character, and then Duran and Carly. So
wait,
we're just,
your main setup was Kevin, Duran.
Kevin, Duran, and Carly. So one character off from Nolan. This is the best game to never leave Japan.
Heck yeah.
It is a travesty that it didn't make it here to the States. I've read and we talked some. I don't think we can come to anything conclusive right now. The reasoning behind them not coming over here with this game, but for whatever reason, it did not make it over here and still has not officially. And so most likely we'll I don't want to say we'll never.
Probably won't.
Listen, but after the powers that be hear this podcast,
right,
maybe
exactly.
It'll happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it always does. I mean, they listen. They listen.
GOG.
There is so much to this game that it might seem overwhelming at first, but if you're willing to put in just a little bit of time, it might just capture your heart like it did mine. I don't know if I would go to the extreme of what Nolan said. In fact, Nolan, when we were talking this week, you made a comment, made me think that you didn't like the game.
I was trolling you. Okay. At that point, I had put enough time into it that I
yeah.
knew.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to kind of peg you and see what you were thinking.
Sure.
And I was like, okay, we're good.
I told Nolan that this game is changing my life.
Yeah.
It is one of the, I'll tell you this. I don't know if I can say it's the best out of the games we played, the 128 games we played off to go back through the catalog and look, but it is one of the most fun, one of the games that I've had the most fun with this week. I think it is beautiful on all accounts. It's absolutely astounding, almost perfect in everything that it's trying to do. Snipin' Dekatsuchu 3 receives my vote for New Game Plus status.
Snipin'. All right, Kenny, bring us home.
Dustin, your party was one off of Nolan's, and my party was one off of yours. I went with Duran and how am I mind blanking? The healer.
Carly.
Carly. I kept trying, my brain kept saying Clary, and I knew that wasn't her name. And I was like, I'm going to sound like an idiot.
Carly.
And so now I went ahead and just said it. And then Lice. Lice?
I don't know, Lisa.
Dude, you read it, you don't say it.
With translations, you didn't have the translator sent by you.
Yeah, you can't say Seiken Densetsu, and so I can I can pronounce her name Lice and make all of our viewers have itchy heads. You're welcome, everybody. So I'm with you guys. One of the best games we've played, easily bar none. Of course, New Game Plus status from me. I probably, if you guys both gave it an A, like double plus, I'm probably just an A plus, but that's probably on some personal preference kinds of things. The action-y role-playing, as opposed to sort of classic turn-based role-playing, I don't tend to like quite as much in this genre. I could have welcomed a little bit more exploration, a little bit more freedom, get out of the linear thing a little bit more. But you can't play this game seriously and not enjoy it,
right?
I don't think. Yeah. We're probably all a little biased because this is an era of games we especially like. This is a genre of games we especially like. And so it's not a surprise to me that it's turned out the way it has, but certainly one of... not, I won't say the best we've played, but certainly one of the best games we've played easily.
Well, I would say that it's better than most, not all, but most of the pre-7 Final Fantasy games. I'll go that hard because I just think it's an absolutely wonderful game.
Oh, man.
And with that, it receives our New Game Plus certification. So... please play this game. Please play this game.
Yeah.
We had a few write in this week. Luciano, so one of the ones that submitted this game, thank you, by the way, wrote in, "I was only able to play a very little this week, but I remembered so much about how great this game is from having played it years ago. The sprite design, colors, and textures in this game all look beautiful and well executed. The music is excellent and memorable, though debatably not as good as Secret of Manas. The gameplay is improved upon from Secret of Mana significantly and makes the battles faster paced. Also adding on a class system for each of their characters and adding in other factors such as a day-night cycle and days for particular spirits to make their magic stronger. Being able to create a party of 3 from 6 characters also allows for a lot of variety in how you play the game. On that same note, the scope of the story in the world is huge and still surprising to me that it was possible in a SNES-era game. The story and storytelling may not be the strongest points of the game, but it does have a certain epic feel to it, and because there are 3 main storylines, it offers plenty of replayability. All in all, this is among the best games ever made, and it's a shame we still never received an official port of it in the West. Though I'm very glad for the fan translation that does exist. Definitely NGP status for me."
Yeah. Thank you for suggesting this. Best Patreon poll we've had. Like, I'm really glad that you like this game enough to tell us to play it because I had no idea it existed.
Me too. I'm super appreciative. I will say I'll agree with him on story being a little flat and predictable, but everything else made up for it in spades.
I don't even know if I think that, though. I really liked the way they went about telling the story, even though it was typical JRPG, save the world thing, get the crystals.
It felt a little cliche for me, and maybe that's playing it in 2018, and you know, in 1995, I may not have felt that way. But there were places, and this isn't like real criticism either. There were places that I think the fact that the translation was fan done probably showed a little bit too, a couple of kind of rough edges. But again, I'm talking like nitpicky stuff that is not even really worth pointing out relative to how great the rest of this game is.
Thank you, Luciano. Terry also wrote in, "I've been pushing people to play Mana games for years. The sad truth is SD3 is not mainstream. Not many people know about it enough for Square Enix to even care. In their eyes, we're not worth their time. Sure, we can set up a cult support, but mainstream? No chance. Blame games like Call of Duty for the lack of mainstream console RPGs. This is a great game and a great series. I just wish more people knew about it."
Thanks, Terry.
Well, more people are going to know about it now.
Well,
yeah. Screw Call of Duty.
Secret of Mana, the one we got, SD2, I guess, was the popular one, right? Or at least...
the one that made it over here.
Yeah, it's right. The one that people know. And actually, there's a remake of it that just came out or is coming out for the Switch. And it looks great. But man, I'd be worried if they tried to do that with this game. I almost think it's too perfect as is. So like, yeah, the fan translation's good. I'm good on that.
Thank you, Terry, for writing in. As always, make sure to send in your commentary out of the Retro Game of the Week to ngppodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to include your thoughts as a part of our episode next week when we play a new game. So sadly, we are putting aside, I'm not putting it aside.
Yeah, but no, we are, I'm going to keep exploring slowly because it's a lot, but I'm going to keep dabbling in this world.
For now, we're going to stop talking about SD3 for a little bit because we're going to randomly select a new game out of our large Retro Master list, and that's going to tell us what game we're going to spend the next 7 days playing.
And no matter what gets picked, we're going to be depressed.
Spinning the randomizer now. Interesting. It looks like we're going to be playing another week of SD3.
That's great. Okay.
All right, thanks, guys.
Randomly selected.
We are playing a side-scrolling platformer.
I love it.
That was released in 1990 for the PC.
Okay.
It's the first set of episodes in a series. It's three-part episodic, and the game is Commander Keen in Invasion of the Vorticons.
No.
Huh.
I've heard good things. I think it's got a unique humor. I'm trying to remember. I've seen it's a big speedrunning game.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I think it's from the group that became id Software that ends up creating Doom and Wolfenstein 3D and some of those other ones we played.
Huh.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, find a copy of this game, Commander Keen in Invasion of the Vorticons. Play along with this week. We'd love to know what you think of this game.
Share your thoughts on Commander Keen with us in our Discord server this week. We'll be chilling in there, and we would love for you to come on over. It's free, and you can find an invite link to our Discord server on our Twitter.
We, by implication, have already thanked some of our wonderful patrons by allowing them to have influence in our game of the week. But we have two reasons to thank you this week, not only for selecting an absolutely fun game to play, but also for your continued support. So to each of you that hop on patreon.com and help support what we do here on the NGP podcast, we just want to say thanks, especially to our producer level supporters, Zion, Bradley, and Gimbarino. You guys are the best.
Make sure to find us on social media. That's Facebook and Twitter at NGP Podcast. You can find our YouTube channel as well. Regular video content going up there. Listen to us directly on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Music, or any other podcast provider. Tried to get us up on Spotify this week, which would be nice, but unfortunately our native player is SoundCloud, and they don't make it easy for you. So if you know a workaround, let me know. Make sure you subscribe so you are the first to get new NGP episodes, which come out every Monday, and they're edited by Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play Seiken Densetsu 3 and Commander Keen in Invasion of the Vorticons. My name is Kevin. Your name is Carly?
My name is, sure, it's Carly.
My name is Carl.
And this has been the best game we've played on New Game Plus.